Yo, it's Keith Smith, Atlanta Falcons fullback, and you're listening to Pro Football Chase Podcast.
This is Jamon Bushrod, Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. You're listening to the Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hey, it's Jimmy Ward. You're listening to the Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Packers wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling. It's the Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hello, this is center Nick Martin for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hey, it's Willie Gay Jr., Chiefs linebacker, and you're listening to Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Keith Kirkwood, wide receiver, number 19 for the Carolina Panthers, and you're listening to the podcast of Pro Football Chase.
Hey, everyone, it's Chris Wormley here, Steelers defensive lineman, and you guys are listening to the Pro Football Chase Podcast.
Hey, what's up? It's Browns linebacker, Jacob Phillips, and we're live on the Chase Podcast.
All right, what's going on, y'all? This is Chandler Sullivan, number 39 for the Green Bay Packers, and you're tuning in to Pro Football Chase. Let's go.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Pro Football Chase Podcast. It's Isaac Sines with you and defensive tackle Drew Worthy on the line today as we get ready to talk about the wild card weekend. A lot of good games, Drew, and then we're going to preview the divisional round. But first things first, we got to check in on you, Drew. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing excellent this morning, bro. Another round of playoffs, another round of exciting football ahead of us, and so I'm ready to get down to it, bro.
Let's start the show with this, all right? Doug Peterson, Philadelphia Eagles head coach, was fired on Monday, or so you can also say parted ways. You know those terms are used in variations, but nonetheless, Peterson, 52 years old, posted a 42-37-1 record in five seasons as the Eagles head coach. He became just the eighth head coach in NFL history to win a Super Bowl within his first 2 years as head coach of a franchise. So, Jarrell, you know, this was surprising news to a lot of people just because of the success Peterson had. Now, we know the internal friction that had been going on between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson. Their relationship was fractured. So what are your instant thoughts about the Eagles firing Doug Peterson?
Well, I think, you know, realistically, when I'm looking at it, I think the Eagles and owner Lurie, I think he thinks that he has a formula in place to be able to rebuild this team and moving forward. I think, you know, they betted on the quarterback in this scenario. You know, obviously Carson Wentz has a contract that's stated to start this upcoming year. He's going to count, I think, at least $25 million against the cap this year. And it goes up every year after that. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a tough scenario to part ways with him, either with release or via trade. I think it's going to be a very tough scenario to get rid of Carson Wentz just because of how much money they are owing him, and especially being in the first year of the new contract. But, you know, it's a little bit easier to get rid of a coach that you pay, you know, around $5-7 million a year as opposed to a guy that you're going to be having to fork over, you know, $50-60 million if you want to part ways.
Well, the thing is that it does increase the likelihood of Carson Wentz returning to the Eagles in 2021 with Doug Peterson out the door. So that very well could have been the case. Now, Doug Peterson apparently had approached Jeffrey Lurie. They had one meeting to recap the season and set a vision for the 2021 season. And reports out there suggest that Lurie was not impressed by Doug Peterson wanting to promote internal candidates to offense and defensive coordinators. You know, Jim Schwartz announced that he's stepping away from coaching for a year, so they were going to have to replace Schwartz at DC, and both of those guys did not see eye to eye on what they wanted for this organization. Doug Peterson apparently was tired of being told what to do from Lurie and Howie Roseman, so both of them part ways. Now, Doug Peterson is on the market. That's a seventh NFL head coaching job that's available to go along with Houston, Detroit, Jacksonville, Atlanta, the Chargers, the New York Jets. So we'll keep tabs on that, Jarrell. That's certainly a surprising nugget of information to start the week on Monday. But how about another hiring that happened yesterday? Dan Quinn, the former Falcons head coach, took the Cowboys defensive coordinator job. Jarrell and Quinn, we all know, succeeded Gus Bradley as defensive coordinator in Seattle, taking over the Legion of Boom in its prime. And he'll now head to Dallas, where they fired Mike Nolan after a historically bad season in Dallas. So I have to say, as a Cowboy fan, I'm intrigued by it. Now, his defenses in Atlanta the last couple of years weren't very successful, so I'm hoping that Dan Quinn, he's obviously not going to have to worry about being a head coach just as a DC. Perhaps he can thrive in that role for a Cowboys defense that certainly needs to bolster the personnel, but having him in charge of the defense, I'm hoping for good things.
Yeah, I personally think that Dan Quinn is going to help, you know, the Cowboys personally. You know, he has the scheme. In order for them to be successful, obviously you have to surround his scheme with the type of personnel. You know, the biggest benefit is that the Dallas front seven has an opportunity to rebuild and come back even stronger next year. The play of Alvin Smith this past year can only be nothing but a positive heading into the offseason. Obviously, you paid, you know, Lawrence a lot of money, and so you expect a better campaign for him. But I think overall, once you get some guys back from injury, especially in the linebacking core, and be able to revamp that secondary, they'll have an opportunity to be very competitive in this upcoming year, especially in the NFC East.
Yeah, they do need to revamp that defense, and in free agency in the draft, they're going to have to get better. You know what? They may be bringing back our guy Gerald McCoy, who signed with Dallas last offseason, and then he tore his quad in training camp, and there's word on the street that he's going to be returning, so that would help the interior of the defensive line. So Dan Quinn now in Dallas as defensive coordinator, Jarrell, but to turn the page here in the podcast, I want to recap wildcard playoff weekend. It was quite a bit of fun. We had the Bills knock off the Colts, the Rams over the Seahawks, which you called last week on the podcast. So that was a big time performance from the defense. Buccaneers, Washington football team, Tampa won. Ravens knocked off the Titans. Saints took care of the Bears. And then the Browns pulled the upset on the Steelers. On that note, I want to highlight an offensive player of wildcard weekend that you believe deserves some recognition, Jarrell. So who's that player for you?
Well, for me, it's got to be Cam Akers, the running back for the Los Angeles Rams. We talked about this last week on the podcast, as well as the Cut the Check podcast, how important his role was in the success the role of having to win this game on the road. I think, you know, having a great rushing attack and having two quarterbacks that were iffy. Obviously, Jared Goff came in and played a great game, you know, after the injury to John Wolford. I think at the end of the day, you know, having Cam Akers running for over 4.5 yards a carry, going for 28 carries and 131 yards on the ground was really the calm for this offense. You know, the receiving core, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, they made some excellent catches down the field. But realistically, man, Cam Akers and being dominant on the ground and especially having those two catches out the backfield as well for 45 yards. I mean, he really put on a big display to be able to get the win for the Rams and solidify for them to head on to Green Bay.
Cam Akers certainly put together an impressive performance, Jarrell. In fact, he is the first rookie to rush for at least 130 yards in a playoff game since Sean Green with the Jets in 2010. And then here's another one for you. Teams are 23-3 in the playoffs all time when they have a rookie who rushed for at least 100 yards. But for me, I'm going to have to shine some light on two players, and it's the Browns running back, the backfield, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Those guys ran absolutely wild, Jarrell, on Sunday night in that win over the Pittsburgh Steelers in a game where everybody had picked the Steelers to knock off the Browns because, man, really, when you think about it, Jarrell, what the Browns were able to overcome, no Kevin Stefanski, they're without Bill Callahan, their offensive line coach, their starting corners, Denzel Ward and Kevin Johnson, and the list goes on, but Cleveland, they showed up to play. Nick Chubb, 76 yards on 18 carries, and then you look at what they were able to get out of Kareem Hunt, 48 yards on 8 carries and 2 touchdowns. Nick Chubb, 4 receptions, 69 yards. Kareem Hunt, 1 reception, 13 yards. And their ability to put pressure on Pittsburgh's defense, catching passes out of the backfield, I believe was pivotal in this win for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I mean, these guys were, man, I'm not going to lie to you, bro. I had to turn the TV off, bro, after a little while just because it just was like, you know, when I'm looking at this, man, you know, Pittsburgh, we talked about this all year. Their offense has been in the bottom half of the league. Their defense has been stellar.
And they've just kind of been, you know, winning these close games because of the culture of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've been known to win these close games. But, you know, when these guys have gotten punched in the mouth, they haven't had anybody, they haven't had a response this year that's been worthy of us talking about. I think we can only have one example was maybe against the Colts after, you know, but that's against Phillip Rivers, man. He's on his way out the door as well. It's not against a premier football team when we're talking about, you know, the guys in the AFC or even in the NFC. So, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they continue to they've been the laughingstock of the league over the last 6 weeks, man, especially going finishing their season 1-5.
And then how about all those TikTok videos by Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool? Right. Those guys have gotten shredded apart, man.
No, but it's just crazy because, once again, the Pittsburgh Steelers they've gone down on the account of social media once again. You know, we saw before with Antonio Brown, obviously the things getting leaked in the locker room, you know, having Mike Tomlin come out in a position where he has to discipline a guy. Then there's fueling and beefing within the organization already about how much leniency guys get. And then, you know, at the end of the day, this is just a new generation of player, and these guys have to adapt. You know, obviously the game and the players have changed, but the necessary structure and how to run an NFL organization hasn't changed. And so these guys have to adapt to what's going on, and they have to understand that this is a business. Yes, we have fun. We make a lot of money, but at the end of the day, this is a business respectively. And ultimately cost them an opportunity to be AFC champs as well as have a run at the Super Bowl.
A stunner there in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, good for them. I know their fan base is absolutely thrilled and hyped about them advancing to the divisional round. But Jarrell, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. There was a lot of good performances out there, and I'll go first on this one. And he wasn't necessarily a flashy player on Saturday, but what he was able to accomplish for his defense was significant. And I'm going to go with Buccaneers linebacker Lavonte David, who's one of my favorite players in the NFL, played at Nebraska. You know, Devin White was out because of COVID-19 protocols, but David upped his game and was all over the field. He finished with 9 total tackles, 8 solo, 1 sack, 1 tackle for loss, 1 pass defense, and 1 quarterback hit. And that Tampa defense, they struggled at times. Jarrell, Taylor Heinicke, he showed up to play, man, and he made some big-time throws down the field, kept Washington in it, especially as the third and fourth quarters came underway. But Lavonte David was a consistent force for Todd Bowles' defense, and for that reason, I want to give him some praise for Defensive Player of Wild Card Weekend.
Yeah, bro, he was balling. Tyler Hickey was trying to do all he could, but these guys were all over the field, man. You know, the Buccaneers, I think it was great that they had an opportunity to really get it was an impressive win, but at the same time, it wasn't necessarily a win that was, you know, obviously you're going to just, you know, just be in awe about. But at the same time, with a young secondary and guys that have never been in this situation before, I think it was great getting the win under their belt, because obviously you got the big dogs coming up in the New Orleans Saints, and that's going to be a nail biter. But we'll get into that at a later point. My defensive player is going to be MJ Stewart, you know, with the Cleveland Browns, cornerback with the Cleveland Browns, had an opportunity to jumpstart the debacle of the Pittsburgh Steelers, having that one-hand interception, having a tackle for loss this past week, also leading his team in tackles as well. I'm going to give it to MJ Stewart just for balling out and realistically setting the tone for this defense. Anytime you go on the road and you're facing a Hall of Fame quarterback, man, when you can get some turnovers, one, even if it's just one turnover, man, that really could jumpstart the team's emotion and their response towards the game. So coming out the gate, man, obviously they had the fumble in which led to a score, but to come right back and to have that one-hand interception, it really was the fueling, the gas on the fire, man, for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. MJ Stewart. The interesting story about M. Jarrell is that he was a second-round pick in 2018 out of North Carolina to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but they cut him before the 2020 season. He was claimed off waivers by the Cleveland Browns, and this is a player that really had his playing time increase because of Kevin Johnson and Denzel Ward and them being depleted in the secondary, and he did not disappoint on Sunday night coming through with that interception that you're just talking about. A unique story, Jarrell. That just goes to show you that a lot of these guys who are cut several times and they end up on contending teams and they continue to work at it, and then they're going to get their time to shine on the biggest stage. And when they come through like MJ Stewart did, it just makes for a really cool story.
Nah, it's really cool, man. I mean, obviously, you know, I've had my share of ups and downs as far as the NFL career, so I can definitely attest to that. As far as, you know, keeping your head in it and sticking things through. And, you know, I had an opportunity to be a teammate with MJ Stewart in Tampa Bay when he was a rookie. You know, he was a great teammate, man, a part of a young secondary in which they relied on him a lot. I personally didn't think the cut was sufficient for his performance. But I think at the end of the day, you know, he's found grass on the other side that's a little bit greener than Tampa. And I think at the end of the day, he's making the best of his opportunity.
I was going to say, you've had your share of ups and downs. You came through and you excelled in your positions when you're given time to play. So MJ Stewart, Lavonte David, those are defensive players of Wild Card Weekend. And now let's get into some of these divisional playoff matchups. They're going to be some really intriguing ones that we're going to watch on Saturday and Sunday. The first game coming up here on Saturday, it's going to be between the number 6-seeded Rams and the number 1-seeded Green Bay Packers, 4:35 p.m. Eastern time on Fox. The reason why I believe this matchup could be a little tricky for Green Bay is because of that Rams defense. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, we know Aaron Donald got banged up a little bit with the rib injury, but he's expected to play. And that Jalen Ramsey-Davante Adams matchup on the outside is going to be must-see TV, Jarrell. I cannot wait to see how those guys battle it out. We know Jalen Ramsey has been playing at an ultra-high level and once again limited DK Metcalf in the wild card round. But when you look at this matchup, obviously I know you got some bias towards you about the Green Bay Packers, but are you a little concerned at all about the Rams coming to town?
I'm always concerned when there's an elite pass rush group coming to face Aaron Rodgers, because obviously we know that that's the Achilles heel of the Green Bay Packers when it comes to playoff football and getting the Green Bay Packers off track. You know, we saw it a couple years ago against the 49ers. We've seen it against the Seahawks. We've also seen it against the New York Giants back in the day as well. So, you know, when it comes to the elite defenses, man, and they come into town, that pass rush has always been the Achilles heel for the Green Bay Packers. On another note, I think at the end of the day, you know, this is going to be a slugfest going down to the very end. On a couple occasions, you know, the Rams have one of the best pass defenses in the National Football League. Obviously, the Green Bay Packers being the number one offense in the National Football League is going to have some say-so. You know, I think the scheme is a lot different than how the Seattle Seahawks approach things as opposed to the Green Bay Packers. There's going to be a lot of more 3-4 wide receiver sets. It's going to be bunches. It's going to be motions. It's going to be sets where the L.A. Rams are going to have to adjust to the things the Green Bay Packers are going to have presented to them. On the other hand, I think their defensive line is going to be effective, and I think that Jalen Ramsey is going to have he's going to have an impact on this game at some point in time. Will it sustain over a long period the whole game? Because obviously receivers and DBs is different. We don't know, but I think at the end of the day, the Green Bay Packers adding in Snack Harrison for their defensive line is going to be able to help their running, their Achilles heel on defense, which has been their rush defense, going up against Cam Akers, because we got a kid that's going to come in with no fear at this point in time now. A young rookie that has no fear, has success. He's coming to take some heads off. And I think if the Rams have an opportunity to control the football and keep 12 off the field, then it's going to be the Rams are going to have some say-so when it comes to this game.
And the thing about it is that Sean McVay said Jared Goff and John Wolford, who suffered a stinger. He took that hit from Jamal Adams against the Seahawks. They're both day-to-day. And once again, for the second consecutive week, he's not going to reveal who his starting quarterback is going to be. Of course, Jared Goff was supposed to be the emergency quarterback, which indeed he was. He entered the ball game still a couple of weeks out from that right thumb surgery, and he was able to do just enough to win that game for the Rams. Of course, the defense had the pick six by Darius Williams. I got to tell you what, Jarrell, I mean, Cooper Kupp, we know he's expected to play. He's dealing with a knee injury, but he should be good to go barring any setbacks in practice this week. I like the Rams, man. I think that that front seven with Michael Brockers, Aaron Donald, as long as he can be effective, I'm sure he's dealing with some sort of fractured ribs. But Leonard Floyd on the outside, they have a good rotation in the interior with Sebastian Joseph Day. Micah Kizer, the linebacker, is playing some good football as well. If they're able to get some dominant play once again from that offensive line, and it really helped them out getting Andrew Whitworth, their anchor of their offensive line, who missed 4 or 5 weeks with that knee injury, they look good. And Sean McVay, he is no stranger to the big stages, obviously taking the Rams to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. So I think this is going to be a very tight game, and I'm going to give the edge to the Los Angeles Rams to pull the upset at Lambeau Field against Aaron Rodgers. I know the guy's hot. He's going to be the MVP, 48 touchdowns to just 5 interceptions this season. But I believe that secondary will anchor down for the Los Angeles Rams, and they'll be able to generate a nice rushing attack against Green Bay, and we may see a little bit of a replication of what the Niners were able to do to the Packers last postseason by absolutely shredding that run defense on the ground.
So this is going to be an interesting one, because I definitely hear your views, man. I personally think it's going to come down to the wire. I'm going to give the edge in favor of Green Bay on a couple occasions. I think, you know, when I'm looking at the Seahawks offense and the success the Rams had, these were long developed routes that the Seahawks were trying to run, big shot plays that they were trying to get down the field. And we know that that's not a part of the Green Bay Packers offense. The Green Bay Packers offense is obviously going to give you what they take, give you what you present. And they can obviously methodically move you all the way down the football field. I think the inclusion of Aaron Jones into this segment, his improvement in the running back category, and how he's been able to withstand the hits and be durable this past year, I think it's gonna do nothing but help these guys in a game like this, because you already know that Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, and Floyd are going to be trying to get themselves upfield, and and that pass rush, it only works when you have all the lanes secure. But when that ball is coming out fast, like how it does with the Green Bay Packers, and the way that Aaron Rodgers scrambles, which is entirely different than how Russell Wilson scrambles, then I think at the end of the day, the Packers do have a shot. I'm not counting out the Rams in this one, but I think it's going to come down to a late-game field goal, and I'm in favor of the Green Bay Packers.
Well, I've got the Los Angeles Rams winning by a game-winning field goal, 26-23 over the Packers. I like what they can bring to the table. I look for Jalen Ramsey to have a great battle with Devontae Adams on the outside. So 26-23, I'm taking the Rams. I know you said a field goal game winner in the Packers' favor. So what's that scoreline for you?
So in the game-winning field goal, I'm actually going to give it in favor of the Packers, 24-23.
Well, now the nightcap on Saturday, Jarrell, I think is going to be the best game of divisional round weekend. Number 5 seeded Ravens at the number 2 Buffalo Bills. 8:15 p.m. Eastern time on NBC. Lamar Jackson got his first playoff win, as did Josh Allen last weekend, to set up this playoff matchup of 2018 first round quarterbacks. The Ravens are hot. The defense is playing well. The Bills continue to surge forward. Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, picking up where they left off in the regular season. They had a deep connection touchdown to help the Bills knock off the Colts at Orchard Park. This is going to provide some fireworks, Jarrell. I cannot wait to see these two teams take the field on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy matchup, man. I mean, you know, obviously the Buffalo Bills have been riding a great high over the last few weeks, and the Ravens getting themselves back into playoff contention, back into that type of playoff mentality. And we saw it when you see, you know, Calais Campbell walking down the sideline, mouthing off to the Tennessee Titans offensive line. You knew at that point in time that there was just a different look in the eyes of the Baltimore Ravens. And so, you know, they were very dominant last week, and it was a very sustainable win. Although I think at the end of the day, I'm going to roll in favor of the Buffalo Bills on a couple of occasions. The Baltimore Ravens won last week, and they look impressive doing what they've been able to do all season long, which was run the football. We knew that they can run the football. They had an excellent day running the football, and Lamar Jackson was spectacular. But when I look at the stat line once again, Lamar Jackson throws an interception, doesn't have an opportunity to get them in the end zone when it comes to pushing the ball down the football field and creating plays through the air. Although Hollywood Brown had an opportunity, he had over 100 yards and he was great on 7 receptions. We're talking about one of the best pass defenses, secondary wise, in the National Football League when it comes to the Buffalo Bills. Potentially 4 Pro Bowlers are going to line up in that secondary this upcoming Saturday. And so I think at the end of the day, yes, Greg Roman is going to have, he's going to have some success on the ground, but when that doesn't work and you have to push the ball through the air, that's when I really get skeptical about the Baltimore Ravens, in which the Tennessee Titans were able to expose last week when they had them in a lot of third and long situations.
I agree with you there, Jarrell. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills to win this game in a close one, 29-27. Josh Allen is just playing out of his mind right now. Brian DeBall, they are in a rhythm offensively. I know they lost Zach Moss for the postseason. In fact, they just signed Devontae Freeman, who was cut from the Giants off injured reserve last Thursday. He's now going to have an opportunity to play that second fiddle to Devin Singletary. So that's kind of a good opportunity for a guy in Devontae Freeman that's been floating around looking for a big-time opportunity. Don't discount what he can bring to that Bills offense as a pass-catching back. Defensively, the Bills really have tightened the screws. Tre'Davious White has been playing well. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, and then Matt Milano, his return back from injured reserve, I believe has given this Bills defense an extraordinary boost. Of course, Tremaine Edmonds playing there right alongside him. Their pass rush has really improved throughout the second half of the season. Jerry Hughes has made some noise. So I like Buffalo. Again, I would agree with you on the point about Lamar Jackson. He went off with his running ability. We saw him break a wild run all the way to the end zone. J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards have been able to have some success on the ground. But this will be a matchup where Lamar Jackson is going to have to be successful to the air, because Buffalo can solely focus on slowing down that rushing attack that Greg Roman puts together, because Buffalo's defense is way better and more efficient than Tennessee's. I just do not have the confidence in Lamar Jackson to make the big-time throws for the Ravens to win this game. I think it'll be close, but the Bills by 2, 29-27 over Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm going to roll in favor of the Bills, too. I think it's going to be a high-scoring matchup, but I'm actually going to roll in favor of the Bills. I'm going to roll in a score of 34-26. And the reason because is that I think the Baltimore Ravens are going to have opportunities to score. You know, if they can get any movement on their 3 techniques up front, you know, obviously you're going to have Ed Oliver in those positions, Harrison in those positions, you know, young bucks that have never necessarily been through the fire, but has a lot of talent. If these guys can secure their holes and don't allow Lamar Jackson to really get ahead of steam going downhill. I mean, we saw against Tennessee, man, these guys were flat-footed on their defensive line. They weren't attacking unless they were blitzing, and they didn't have any opportunities to change the line of scrimmage when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens. And when you can't change the line of scrimmage against a team, especially a team out of the AFC North that runs the football effectively like that, then it's going to make for a long day. And so realistically for me, yes, you talked about having all the linebacking core back. You have Edmonds, you have Milano, who is one of the best pass coverage linebackers in the National Football League. But it realistically for me is going to come down to that 3 technique and that nose for Sean McDermott's defense, and how stout that they are when it comes to attacking the guys up front and creating small lanes for the running backs to run through. If they can get movement on those guys up front and Lamar Jackson gets ahead of steam, J.K. Dobbins gets ahead of steam. We haven't even discussed Mark Ingram, who's still coming back from injury and having an opportunity to be impactful in this game. That's still a Pro Bowler that they have at their third running back right now. So
if these guys can get ahead of steam, then it's going to be a long night for the Buffalo Bills. But I personally think that Sean McDermott is going to have these guys ready to play and ready to compete. So I'm going to go in favor of the Buffalo Bills, 34-26.
Yeah, and again, Josh Allen, the level he's playing at is remarkable. He is an MVP candidate as well. And I think at this point, he has drastically made a leap forward, and Brian DeBall has a big part of that. So I like the Bills to get it done because of Josh Allen's performance, and I look for him to have another good showing on Saturday night. So we'll go to the next matchup on Sunday's slate of games, Jarrell. The number 6-seeded Browns at the number 1-seeded Kansas City Chiefs, 3:05 p.m. Eastern time on CBS. We get Baker Mayfield against Patrick Mahomes. I know those two guys played in a big-time shootout in college back in 2016. Texas Tech and Oklahoma. Mayfield topped Mahomes on that high-scoring game. I believe it was 66-59. So now they're going to play each other in the divisional round of the playoffs. Kansas City, we know who they are, being such a high-powered offense. The Cleveland Browns coming off a 28-point quarter that they put up on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They came out, played with grit, with fire, with energy defensively. They're going to get back Denzel Ward, Kevin Johnson, of course, Kevin Stefanski returning from the COVID list. And we know Kareem Hunt, he already said it. He thinks this game is personal against the Kansas City Chiefs because they released him after that incident when he kicked that girl. And now he's going to return to Arrowhead, Jarrell. So there's a lot of storylines in this game to unpack. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Well, first and foremost, with Kareem Hunt, that's cool and all that it's personal, but you, dog, you messed up on your own.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, like, that, I mean, like, you could be personal all you want, bro. Just make sure you make enough plays on Sunday to keep your name out the paper. That's all he need to focus on and worry about.
And he lied to the organization, too. That's why they cut him, so exactly. I didn't really agree with that.
That's way out of pocket. Like, you know, that's on him. And then for me personally, I don't really want to get in depth in that, but like, bro, don't, if you have any opportunity, don't bring that up in the light, bro. Let all your success be doing the talking right now. Everything that's what you need to be focused on. It ain't no revenge tour or no for a team to release you because you put your hands on a female. Like, that's out of pocket. Like, but as far as the schematics, the X's and O's of the contest, I personally think that the Kansas City Chiefs need to be highly aware that they don't want to get into a situation where they're trying to go score for score or necessarily going score for score with the Browns. This is a team that obviously, it hurts to say this, but when OBJ has been out the lineup, Baker Mayfield has been obviously shining. You don't want to bring up his name a lot, obviously, but, you know, Baker Mayfield has been on a tear over the last half of the season, and even being able to successfully win against teams that were above 500, which that was a knock on him earlier in this year. But when we're talking about the Cleveland Browns, I think for me, when they went into that game highly motivated, that was a personal thing that they wanted to get done. Now, can you stay motivated moving forward when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that we know that's a walking 30 points per game, but also has enough on their defensive side to make a statement? I think for me, it's going to come down to the Kansas City Chiefs running the football, man. Give the ball to Le'Veon Bell, man. Go ahead and let him do what he does best and run the football, because the Browns knew that the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't going to run the football. They're 32nd in the National Football League. They're not running the football. So you can go ahead and pin your ears back and become more dominant in that fashion. But when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, they got to run the football, man. You got a dude back there that's been known to kill the Cleveland Browns. I think the Chiefs should run the football in order to keep the Browns' high-powered offense off the field, as well as to make a statement against this Cleveland Browns defense, who was essentially all ready to go because they knew the Pittsburgh Steelers were only going to be throwing the football.
I see big performances coming from Kansas City's defensive front. I know all the talk comes on offense with Mahomes, with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman, but I like Chris Jones and Frank Clark. Those are two of their anchors on defense. I believe they will apply immense pressure on Baker Mayfield on Sunday, and they're going to make life difficult for him and that offense moving forward. They do not get talked about enough. Chris Jones, Frank Clark, remember the name. Sunday, they're going to put it together in a big way for Kansas City.
Man, well, you know I'm always an advocate for the D-line, bro. So I'm definitely going to give these boys a shout-out. Frank Clark being a personal friend of mine and Chris Jones just being one of the most dominant defensive linemen in the National Football League. These guys are definitely going to have a say-so. You know, Jack Conklin got injured last week, and he's been, you know, floating up and down on the injury report this week. So we don't necessarily know what's going to be taking place for Sunday. But I think at the end of the day, if these guys can have big games and play well, then the Kansas City Chiefs run away with this one. You know, obviously, if you take these guys out the game and the Browns are able to keep up scoring-wise with the Chiefs, then it's going to be a close game. But for me personally, I just think it's going to come down to are the Browns still motivated? Because, you know, that game last week, that game was personal, bro. Like, when it comes to you talking about a divisional foe, and you're talking about the playoffs, and you're talking about we haven't been here in 18 years, and you're talking about we were terrible this and this point in time now, then and this and that. You know, you got the dancing on the logo and whatnot. I think at the end of the day, bro, the Cleveland Browns didn't need any more motivation than they already had. Now the Kansas City Chiefs, you're talking about, you know, a high-powered offense. Now how are you going to get motivated for them? Because you know they can run the football and throw the football. How motivated are you defensively to come out and put up a great performance like you did against Pittsburgh?
And that's just the thing. I don't think the Browns secondary can hold up well enough against Kansas City. I mean, they're already getting picked apart by Ben Roethlisberger when they're trying to come from behind. I get it. They were playing soft coverage. Joe Woods was rolling out the three deep look, safeties over the top. They didn't want to allow the big play. But even with Denzel Ward coming back and Kevin Johnson coming back, I just, you know, the Chiefs are built differently with Tyreek Hill, with Sammy Watkins coming back, with Mecole Hardman. There's just too much speed on that field. And then, yeah, when you throw in that run game, we don't know about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, his status yet. We'll see if he's available. If not, they're going to have Le'Veon Bell. I like them to pull away Jarrell in the third quarter, 34-24. I can see both of these teams exchanging scores early, kind of like what the Titans did with them last year against the Kansas City Chiefs, but too much firepower. Andy Reid, I trust him. Eric Bieniemy to call up the plays. The Cleveland Browns may be able to hang close a little bit, but I like the Chiefs to pull away and end up winning by 10, 34-24.
Yeah, I personally agree with that stat line, man. We're going to actually have identical score lines on this one because, you know, I think the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, these guys have been sitting back. They've been hungry. They've been waiting. They're healthy. They're fresh. There's one thing about their offense is that they literally can wake up and when they feet hit the ground, they can score 30 points. And so, like I said, it's going to come down to how well their defense plays. As you mentioned before, Frank Clark and Chris Jones, Tyrann Mathieu, et cetera, and how many plays they can make defensively. But I think the Kansas City Chiefs run away with this one. The Browns, I think they really I think they shot their low last week when it came to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm going to roll with the Kansas City Chiefs in the same score line, 34-24.
That's pretty interesting. Both you and I, same score line. We're both going with the Chiefs. Again, the Browns, credit them. I think they will put up a fight against Kansas City, but the Chiefs just have way too much in their arsenal. So the final game of divisional round, Jarrell, this is the Sunday afternoon game, 6:40 p.m. Eastern time. This will be broadcasted on Fox. 5-seed Buccaneers, 2-seeded Saints. These guys will meet for a third time this season. We know how the first two meetings turned out for the Buccaneers. I mean, the Saints absolutely throttled them in both matchups. New Orleans defense has played very well against Tom Brady. Tampa's offense has been struggling, especially when they're having to go up against Marshawn Lattimore, who's had his wins over Mike Evans in that one-on-one matchup. Do you believe that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can finally come out on top in the third matchup over their divisional foe, the New Orleans Saints?
I'm going to roll with the Bucs, man. I'm rolling with playoff time. I'm rolling with Bruce Arians to call the game of his life. And I'm going to roll with this defense and their young secondary to get their hands on the football and create one, if not two, turnovers against Drew Brees. I think, obviously, we saw last week Michael Thomas in the slot was very effective. I think at the end of the day, the linebacking core at Tampa Bay is a little bit better than Chicago. Even though those guys are over there are elite, I'm going to still roll in favor of the two guys, especially with getting Devin White back into the lineup as well, getting activated off the COVID. You have an opportunity to get Stephen McClendon back for your rushing attack. That's going to help shut down Alvin Kamara, slow him down just to an extent. And realistically, like I said before, getting Devin White going alongside Levante David, these guys have been great and excellent in pass coverage, especially against Alvin Kamara. I think at the end of the day, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to have their say-so when it comes to the final matchup between the New Orleans Saints and the Tampa Bay Bucs.
I am very tempted to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jarrell, just because you look at it in the NFL, it's extraordinarily hard, and you know this more than most of us, that beating an NFL team three times in the same season is very difficult to do. So part of me wants to go with the Buccaneers to pull the upset off in New Orleans, but I just cannot right now, because when I've seen the Saints defense and how aggressive they are, and especially you look at those two matchups against Tom Brady, flustering him in the pocket. Dennis Allen seems to have Tom Brady and Bruce Arians' number. Every time they dial up a blitz on the outside, they get home and they fluster him in the pocket, so much so that it affects his ability to make passes down the field. Then you go along with Marshawn Lattimore's success against Mike Evans on the outside. And then you look at the return of Trey Hendrickson. He's going to be healthy. He was inactive against Chicago. I like the Saints to take care of business at home, 31-27 over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This game, I believe, will be very close all the way down to the wire. But I like Drew Brees to get the job done. And, of course, another dominant performance by that Saints defense. Malcolm Jenkins, the Iron Man, back there anchoring that secondary for New Orleans.
Man, I definitely see your points, man. I just think in the end of the day, man, Drew Brees is a guy that needs everything for him to go right offensively in order for them to be able to move down the football field. When it comes to skill-wise and just leading his team and just purely going out there and throwing the football, I think obviously that's going to come in favor of Tom Brady. I think at the end of the day, when it comes down to number of possessions, controlling the clock, having who's going to have the last possession, I'm going to roll in favor of Tom Brady, man. I think, you know, he realizes what's at stake. Obviously, Drew Brees realizes what's at stake. But I just think at the end of the day, at this point in time now of the season, with Tampa Bay getting a better win, especially going on the road to do so, has more of an impact mentally and momentum-wise for their team going into that tough environment when it comes to New Orleans. And so I'm just going to roll in favor of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. I think they're going to get it done. I'm going to roll in a favor and a score of 37-31.
All right. Well, you're going with Tom Brady, Tampa Bay. I'm going to stick with the Saints, although I am tempted to go with the Bucs, as I stated several times. I like the Saints to win this just because of that defense. Marcus Davenport's another player that's under the radar. When he is healthy, he can be a force with his length coming off the edge for the New Orleans Saints. So there you have it, Jarrell. All of the divisional round matchups that we went through, gave our picks for each game, provided some analysis for the listeners. We'll kick things off on Saturday, Rams-Packers, followed by the Ravens and Bills, and then Sunday, Browns-Chiefs, first game, Buccaneers-Saints. It's going to be great. I cannot wait to see how these matchups unfold, Jarrell. It's going to be another good weekend of NFL football.
Absolutely, man. I'm so excited. Shout out to all my teammates, former teammates, everybody that's balling this weekend. You guys continue to stay safe out there, man, and let's get to it, man. Divisional round, here we go.
Yes, sir. Well, again, Jarrell, enjoyed it, man. It's always a blast to get you on the podcast. We will see how things unfold come this weekend. But until then, take care, God bless, and stay safe, brother.
Yes, sir. You too, man. I appreciate it again.